Very intelligent mind indeed. He wasn't surprised that she'd never attracted any serious suitors for her hand. She wasn't a beauty by any stretch, although upon close examination she was more attractive than he'd remembered her to be. Her brown hair had a touch of red to it, highlighted nicely by the flickering candles, and her skin was quite lovely, that perfect peaches and cream complexion that ladies were always slathering their faces with arsenic to achieve. But Penelope's attractiveness wasn't the sort that men usually noticed, and her normally shy and occasionally even stuttering demeanour didn't exactly showcase her personality. Still, it was too bad about her lack of popularity. She would have made someone a perfectly good wife.
"So you're saying,"
he mused, steering his mind back to the matter at hand, "that I should consider a life of crime?" "Nothing of the sort," she replied, a demure smile on her face. "Just that I rather suspect you could talk your way out of anything." And then, unexpectedly, her mien grew serious, and she quietly said, "I envy that." Colin surprised himself by holding out his hand and saying,
"Penelope Featherington, I think you should dance with me."
And then Penelope surprised him by laughing and saying,
"That's very sweet of you to ask, but you don't have to dance with me any longer."
His pride felt oddly pricked.
"What the devil do you mean by that?"
She shrugged.
"It's official now. I'm a spinster. There's no longer a reason to dance with me, just so that I don't feel left out."
"That's not why I danced with you,"
he protested. But he knew that it was exactly the reason. And half the time he'd only remembered to ask because his mother had poked him hard in the back and reminded him. She gave him a faintly pitying look, which galled him, because he'd never thought to be pitied by Penelope Featherington.
"If you think," he said, feeling his spine grow stiff, "that I'm going to allow you to wiggle out of a dance with me now, you're quite delusional."
"You don't have to dance with me just to prove you don't mind doing it," she said.
"I want to dance with you,"
he fairly growled.
"Very well,"
she said, after what seemed to be a ridiculously long pause.
"It would surely be churlish for me to refuse."
"It was probably churlish of you to doubt my intentions,"
he said as he took her arm.
"But I'm willing to forgive you if you can forgive yourself."
She stumbled, which made him smile.
"I do believe I'll manage,"
she choked out.
"Excellent."
He offered her a bland smile.
"I'd hate to think of you living with the guilt."
The music was just beginning, so Penelope took his hand and curtsied as they began the minuet. It was difficult to talk during the dance, which gave Penelope a few moments to catch her breath and gather her thoughts. Perhaps she'd been a bit too harsh with Colin. She shouldn't have scolded him for asking her to dance, when the truth was, those dances were among her most cherished memories. Did it really matter if he'd only done it out of pity? It would have been worse if he'd never asked her at all. She grimaced. Worse still, did this mean she had to apologize?
"Was something wrong with that eclair?"
Colin inquired the next time they stepped toward each other. A full 10 seconds passed before they were close enough again for her to say,
"I beg your pardon."
"You look as if you've swallowed something vile,"
he said, loudly this time, for he'd clearly lost patience with waiting for the dance to allow them to speak. Several people looked over, then stepped discreetly away, as if Penelope might actually be sick right there on the ballroom floor.
"Do you need to shout it to the entire world?"
Penelope hissed.
"You know,"
he said thoughtfully, bending into an elegant bow as the music drew to a close,
"that was the loudest whisper I've ever heard."
He was insufferable, but Penelope wasn't going to say so, because it would only make her sound like a character in a very bad romantic novel. She'd read one just the other day, in which the heroine used the word, or one of its synonyms, on every other page.
"Thank you for the dance,"
she said, once they'd reached the perimeter of the room. She almost added, "You can now tell your mother that you fulfilled your obligations," but immediately regretted her impulse. Colin hadn't done anything to deserve such sarcasm. It wasn't his fault that men only danced with her when forced to by their mothers. He'd always at least smiled and laughed while doing his duty, which was more than she could say for the rest of the male population. He nodded politely and murmured his own thanks. They were just about to part ways when they heard a loud female voice bark out, "Mr. Bridgerton!" They both froze. It was a voice they both knew. It was a voice everyone knew. "Save me!" Colin groaned. Penelope looked over her shoulder to see the infamous Lady Danbury pushing her way through the crowd, wincing when her ever-present cane landed on the foot of some hapless young lady.
"Maybe she means a different Mr. Bridgerton," Penelope suggested. "There are quite a few of you, after all, and it's possible—"
"I'll give you £10 if you don't leave my side," Colin blurted out. Penelope choked on air.
"Don't be silly. I—"
"20.
"Done,"
she said with a smile, not because she particularly needed the money, but rather because it was strangely enjoyable to be extorting it from Colin.
"Lady Danbury,"
she called out, hurrying to the elderly lady's side.
"How nice to see you."
"Nobody ever thinks it's nice to see me," Lady Danbury said sharply, "except maybe my nephew, and half the time I'm not even sure about him. But I thank you for lying all the same."
Colin said nothing, but she still turned in his direction and swatted his leg with her cane.
"Good choice dancing with this one," she said. "I've always liked her. More brains than the rest of her family put together."
Penelope opened her mouth to defend at least her younger sister when Lady Danbury barked out,
"Ha!"
After barely a second's pause, adding,
"I noticed neither of you contradicted me."
"It is always a delight to see you, Lady Danbury," Colin said,
giving her just the sort of smile he might have directed at an opera singer.
"Glib, this one is,"
Lady Danbury said to Penelope.
"You'll have to watch out for him."
"It is rarely necessary that I do so," Penelope said, "as he is most often out of the country."
"See?"
Lady Danbury crowed again.
"I told you she was bright."
"You'll notice," Colin said smoothly, "that I did not contradict you." The old lady smiled approvingly.
"So you didn't. You're getting smart in your old age, Mr. Bridgerton."
"It has occasionally been remarked that I possessed a small modicum of intelligence in my youth as well."
"Humph! The important word in that sentence being small, of course."
Colin looked at Penelope through narrowed eyes. She appeared to be choking on laughter.
"We women must look out for one another,"
Lady Danbury said, to no one in particular,
"since it is clear that no one else will do so."
Colin decided it was definitely time to go.
"I think I see my mother."
"Escape is impossible,"
Lady Danbury crowed.
"Don't bother to attempt it. And besides, I know for a fact you don't see your mother. She's attending to some brainless twit who tore the hem off her dress."
She turned to Penelope, who was now exerting such effort to control her laughter that her eyes were glistening with unshed tears.
"How much did he pay you not to leave him alone with me?"
Penelope quite simply exploded.
"I beg your pardon,"
she gasped, clasping a hand over her horrified mouth.
"Oh, no, go right ahead,"
Colin said expansively.
"You've been such a help already."
"You don't have to give me the £20, she said.
"I wasn't planning to."
"Only £20?
Lady Danbury asked.
I would have thought I'd be worth at least 25.
Colin shrugged.
"I'm a third son. Perpetually short of funds, I'm afraid."
"Ha! You're as plump in the pocket as at least 3 earls,
Lady Danbury said.
"Well, maybe not earls,"
she added, after a bit of thought,
but a few viscounts, and most barons, to be sure."
Collins smiled blandly. "Isn't it considered impolite to talk about money in mixed company?" Lady Danbury let out a noise that was either a wheeze or a giggle. Collins wasn't sure which. Then said,
"It's always impolite to talk about money, mixed company or no. But when one is my age, one can do almost anything one pleases."
"I do wonder," Penelope mused, "what one can't do at your age."
Lady Danbury turned to her.
"I beg your pardon?"
"You said that one could do almost anything one pleases."
Lady Danbury stared at her in disbelief, then cracked a smile. Colin realized he was smiling as well.
"I like her,"
Lady Dee said to him, pointing at Penelope as if she was some sort of statue for sale.
"Did I tell you I like her?"
"I believe you did," he murmured.
Lady Danbury turned to Penelope and said, her face a mask of utter seriousness,
"I do believe I couldn't get away with murder, but that might be all."
All at once, both Penelope and Colin burst out laughing.
"Eh?"
Lady Danbury said.
"What's so funny?"
"Nothing,"
Penelope gasped. As for Colin, he couldn't even manage that much.
"It's not nothing,"
Lady Dee persisted.
"And I shall remain here and pester you all night until you tell me what it is. Trust me when I tell you that that is not your desired course of action."
Penelope wiped a tear from her eye.
"I just got through telling him," she said,
motioning with her head toward Colin,
"that he probably could get away with murder."
"Did you now?"
Lady Danbury mused, tapping her cane lightly against the floor, the way someone else might scratch her chin while pondering a deep question.
"Do you know? But I think you might be right. A more charming man I don't think London has ever seen."
Colin raised a brow.
"Now, why don't I think you meant that as a compliment, Lady Danbury?"
"Of course it's a compliment, you dunderhead."
Colin turned to Penelope.
"As opposed to that, which was clearly a compliment."
Lady Danbury beamed.
"I declare,"
she said, or in all truth declared,
"this is the most fun I've had all season."
"Happy to oblige,"
Colin said with an easy smile.
"It's been an especially dull year, don't you think?"
Lady Danbury asked Penelope. Penelope nodded.
"Last year was a bit tedious as well."
"But not as bad as this year,"
Lady Dee persisted.
"Don't ask me,"
Colin said affably.
"I've been out of the country."
"Phew! I suppose you're going to say that your absence is the reason we've all been so bored."
"I would never dream of it,"
Colin said with a disarming smile.
"But clearly, if the thought has crossed your mind, it must have some merit."
"Phew! Whatever the case, I'm bored."
Colin looked over at Penelope, who appeared to be holding herself very, very still, presumably to stave off laughter.
"Heywood!"
Lady Danbury suddenly called out, waving over a middle-aged gentleman.
"Wouldn't you agree with me?"
A vaguely panicked expression drifted across Lord Heywood's face, and then, when it became clear that he could not escape, he said,
"I try to make a policy of always agreeing with you."
Lady Danbury turned to Penelope and said,
"Is it my imagination, or are men getting more sensible?"
Penelope's only answer was a non-committal shrug. Colin decided she was a wise girl indeed. Heywood cleared his throat, his blue eyes blinking fast and furious in his rather fleshy face.
What precisely am I agreeing to?"
"That the season is boring,"
Penelope supplied helpfully.
"Ah, Miss Featherington,"
Heywood said in a blustery sort of voice.
"Didn't see you there."
Colin stole just enough of a glance at Penelope to see her lips straighten into a small, frustrated smile.
"Right here next to you,"
she muttered.
So you are, Heywood said jovially. And yes, the season is dreadfully boring. Did someone say the season is dull?
Colin glanced to his right. Another man and two ladies had just joined the group and were avidly expressing their agreement.
Tedious, one of them murmured. Appallingly tedious. I have never attended a more banal round of parties, one of the ladies announced with an affected sigh.
I shall have to inform my mother, Colin said tightly. He was among the most easy-going of men, but really there were some insults he could not let pass.
Oh, not this gathering, the woman hastened to add. This ball is truly the only shining light in an otherwise dark and dismal string of gatherings. Why, I was just saying to...
Stop now, Lady Danbury ordered, before you choke on your foot.
The lady quickly silenced herself.
It's odd, Penelope murmured. Oh, Miss Featherington, said the lady, who'd previously been going on about dark and dismal gatherings. Didn't see you there.
What's odd? Colin asked, before anyone else could tell Penelope how unremarkable they found her.
She gave him a small, grateful smile before explaining herself.
It's odd how the Tons seems to entertain themselves by pointing out how unentertained they are.
I beg your pardon,
Heywood said, looking confused. Penelope shrugged.
I think the lot of you are having a jolly good time talking about how bored you are, that's all.
Her comment was met with silence. Lord Heywood continued to look confused, and one of the two ladies must have had a speck of dust in her eye, because she couldn't seem to do anything but blink. Colin couldn't help but smile. He hadn't thought Penelope's statement was such a terribly complicated concept.
The only interesting thing to do is read Whistledown, said the non-blinking lady, as if Penelope had never even spoken.
The gentleman next to her murmured his assent. And then Lady Danbury began to smile. Colin grew alarmed. The old lady had a look in her eye, a frightening look.
I have an idea, she said.
Someone gasped. Someone else groaned.
A brilliant idea!
Not that any of your ideas are anything but, Colin murmured in his most affable voice.
Lady Danbury shushed him with a wave of her hand.
How many great mysteries are there in life, really?
No one answered, so Colin guessed. 42? She didn't even bother to scowl at him.
I am telling you all, here and now.
Everyone leaned in. Even Colin. It was impossible not to indulge the drama of the moment.
You are all my witnesses.
Colin thought he heard Penelope mutter, Get on with it.
£1,000,
Lady Danbury said. The crowd surrounding her grew.
£1,000,
she repeated, her voice growing in volume. Really? She would have been a natural on the stage.
£1,000!
It seemed the entire ballroom had hushed into reverent silence.
To the person who unmasks Lady Whistledown.
Chapter 3. This author would be remiss if it was not mentioned that the most talked-about moment at last night's birthday ball at Bridgerton House was not the rousing toast to Lady Bridgerton, age not to be revealed, but rather Lady Danbury's impertinent offer of £1,000 to whomever unmasks me.
Do your worst, ladies and gentlemen of the Ton. You haven't a prayer of solving this mystery.
Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 12th of April, 1824. Precisely 3 minutes were required for news of Lady Danbury's outrageous dare to spread throughout the ballroom. Penelope knew this to be true because she happened to be facing a large and, according to Kate Bridgerton, extremely precise grandfather clock, when Lady Danbury made her announcement. At the words, £1,000 to the person who unmasks Lady Whistledown, the clock read 10:44. The long hand had advanced no farther than 47 when Nigel Burbrook stumbled into the rapidly growing circle of people surrounding Lady Danbury and proclaimed her latest scheme scrumbly good fun. And if Nigel had heard about it, that meant everyone had, because Penelope's brother-in-law was not known for his intelligence, his attention span, or his listening ability. Nor, Penelope thought wryly, for his vocabulary. Scrumbly indeed.
"And who do you think Lady Whistledown is?"
Lady Danbury asked Nigel.
"No earthly idea," he admitted. "Ain't me, that's all I know."
"I think we all know that,"
Lady D replied.
"Who do you think it is?"
Penelope asked Colin. He offered her a one-shouldered shrug.
"I've been out of town too often to speculate."
"Don't be silly,"
Penelope said.
"Your cumulative time in London certainly adds up to enough parties and routs to form a few theories."
But he just shook his head.
"I really couldn't say."
Penelope stared at him for a moment longer than was necessary, or, in all honesty, socially acceptable. There was something odd in Colin's eyes, something fleeting and elusive. The Ton often thought him nothing more than a devil-may-care charmer, but he was far more intelligent than he let on, and she'd have bet her life that he had a few suspicions. But for some reason he wasn't willing to share them with her.
"Who do you think it is?"
Colin asked, avoiding her question with one of his own.
"You've been out in society just about as long as Lady Whistledown. Surely you must have thought about it."
Penelope looked about the ballroom, her eyes resting on this person and that, before finally returning to the small crowd around her.
"I think it could very well be Lady Danbury," she replied. "Wouldn't that be a clever joke on everyone?"
Colin looked over at the elderly lady, who was having a grand old time talking up her latest scheme. She was thumping her cane on the ground, chattering animatedly, and smiling like a cat with cream, fish, and an entire roast turkey.
"It makes sense," he said thoughtfully, "in a rather perverse sort of way."
Penelope felt the corners of her mouth twist.
"She's nothing if not perverse."
She watched Colin watching Lady D for another few seconds, then quietly said,
"But you don't think it's her?"
Colin slowly turned his head to face her, raising one brow in silent question.
"I can tell by the expression on your face,"
Penelope explained. He grinned, that loose, easy grin he so often used in public.
"And here I thought I was inscrutable."
"Afraid not," she replied. "Not to me, anyway."
Colin sighed.
"I fear it will never be my destiny to be a dark, brooding hero."
"You may well find yourself someone's hero," Penelope allowed. "There's time for you yet. But dark and brooding."
She smiled.
"Not very likely."
"Too bad for me,"
he said jauntily, giving her another one of his well-known smiles. This one, the lopsided, boyish one.
"The dark, brooding types get all the women."
Penelope coughed discreetly, a bit surprised he'd be speaking of such things with her, not to mention the fact that Colin Bridgerton had never had trouble attracting women. He was grinning at her, awaiting a response, and she was trying to decide whether the correct reaction was polite, maidenly outrage, or a laugh and an "I'm such a good sport" sort of chuckle, when Eloise quite literally skidded to a halt in front of them.
"Did you hear the news?"
Eloise asked breathlessly.
"Were you running?"
Penelope returned. Truly a remarkable feat in such a crowded ballroom.
"Lady Danbury has offered £1,000 to whomever unmasks Lady Whistledown."
"We know,"
Colin said, in that vaguely superior tone exclusive to older brothers. Eloise let out a disappointed sigh.
"You do?"
Colin motioned to Lady Danbury, who was still a scant few yards away. "We were right here when it happened." Eloise looked annoyed in the extreme, and Penelope knew exactly what she was thinking, and would most probably relate to her the following afternoon. It was one thing to miss an important moment. It was another entirely to discover that one's brother had seen the entire thing.
"Well, people are already talking about it," Eloise said. "Gushing, really. I haven't been witness to such excitement in years."
Colin turned to Penelope and murmured, "This is why I so often choose to leave the country." Penelope tried not to smile.
"I know you're talking about me, and I don't care,"
Eloise continued, barely pausing to take a breath.
"I tell you, the Tonner's gone mad. Everyone, and I mean everyone, is speculating on her identity, although the shrewdest ones won't say a word. Don't want others to win on their hunch, don't you know?"
"I think," Colin announced, "that I am not so in need of £1,000 that I care to worry about this."
"It's a lot of money," Penelope said thoughtfully. He turned to her in disbelief.
"Don't tell me you're going to join in this ridiculous game."
She cocked her head to the side, lifting her chin in what she hoped was an enigmatic, or, if not enigmatic, at the very least slightly mysterious manner.
"I am not so well healed that I can ignore the offer of £1,000, she said. "Perhaps if we work together," Eloise suggested.
"God save me,"
was Colin's reply. Eloise ignored him, saying to Penelope,
"We could split the money."
Penelope opened her mouth to reply, but Lady Danbury's cane suddenly came into view, waving wildly through the air. Colin had to take a quick step to the side just to avoid getting his ear clipped off.
"Miss Featherington," Lady D boomed, "you haven't told me who you suspect."
"No, Penelope," Colin said, a rather smirky smile on his face. "You haven't."
Penelope's first instinct was to mumble something under her breath and hope that Lady Danbury's age had left her hard enough of hearing that she would assume that any lack of understanding was the fault of her own ears and not Penelope's lips. But even without glancing to her side, she could feel Colin's presence, sense his quirky, cocky grin egging her on, and she found herself standing a little straighter, with her chin perched just a little higher than usual. He made her more confident, more daring. He made her more herself, or at least the herself she wished she could be.
"Actually,"
Penelope said, looking Lady Danbury almost in the eye,
"I think it's you."
A collective gasp echoed around them. And for the first time in her life, Penelope Featherington found herself at the very centre of attention. Lady Danbury stared at her, her pale blue eyes shrewd and assessing. And then the most amazing thing happened. Her lips began to twitch at the corners. Then they widened until Penelope realised she was not just smiling, but positively grinning.
"I like you, Penelope Featherington,"
Lady Danbury said, tapping her right on the toe with her cane.
"I wager half the ballroom is of the same notion, but no one else has the mettle to tell me so."
"I really don't either,"
Penelope admitted, grunting slightly as Colin elbowed her in the ribs.
"Obviously,"
Lady Danbury said, with a strange light in her eyes,
"you do."
Penelope didn't know what to say to this. She looked at Colin, who was smiling at her encouragingly. Then she looked back to Lady Danbury, who looked almost maternal, which had to be the strangest thing of all. Penelope rather doubted that Lady Danbury had given maternal looks to her own children.
"Isn't it nice?"
the older lady said, leaning in so that only Penelope could hear her words, "to discover that we're not exactly what we thought we were." And then she walked away, leaving Penelope wondering if maybe she wasn't quite what she'd thought she was. Maybe, just maybe, she was something a little bit more.
The next day was a Monday, which meant that Penelope took tea with the Bridgerton ladies at number 5. She didn't know when, precisely, she'd fallen into that habit, but it had been so for close to a decade, and if she didn't show up on a Monday afternoon, she rather thought Lady Bridgerton would send someone over to fetch her. Penelope rather enjoyed the Bridgerton custom of tea and biscuits in the afternoon. It wasn't a widespread ritual. Indeed, Penelope knew of no one else who made a daily habit of it. But Lady Bridgerton insisted that she simply could not last from luncheon to supper, especially not when they were observing town hours and eating so late at night. And thus, every afternoon at 4, she and any number of her children, and often a friend or two, met in the informal upstairs drawing room for a snack. There was drizzle in the air, even though it was a fairly warm day, so Penelope took her black parasol with her for the short walk over to number 5. It was a route she'd followed hundreds of times before, a few houses down to the corner of Mount and Davies Street, then along the edge of Berkeley Square to Bruton Street. But she was in an odd mood that day, a little bit light-hearted, and maybe even a little bit childish, so she decided to cut across the northern corner of the Berkeley Square green, for no other reason than she liked the squishy sound her boots made on the wet grass. It was Lady Danbury's fault. It had to be. She'd been positively giddy since their encounter the night before.
"Not what I thought I was," she sang to herself as she walked, adding a word every time the soles of her boots sank into the ground. "Something more, something more."
She reached a particularly wet patch and moved like a skater on the grass, singing softly, of course. She hadn't changed so much from the night before that she actually wanted someone to hear her singing in public.
"Something more,"
as she slid forward. Which was, of course, since it was fairly well established, in her own mind at least, that she had the worst timing in the history of civilization, right when she heard a male voice call out her name. She skidded to a halt and gave fervent thanks that she caught her balance at the very last moment instead of landing on her bottom on the wet and messy grass. It was, of course, him.
"Colin,"
she said in a slightly embarrassed voice, holding still as she waited for him to reach her side.
"What a surprise."
He looked like he was trying not to smile. "Were you dancing?"
"Dancing?"
she echoed.
"It looked like you were dancing."
"Oh, no."
She swallowed guiltily, because even though she wasn't technically lying, it felt as if she were.
"Of course not."
His eyes crinkled slightly at the corners.
"Pity, then. I would have felt compelled to partner you, and I've never danced in Berkeley Square."
If he'd said the same to her just 2 days earlier, she would have laughed at his joke and let him be the witty and charming one. But she must have heard Lady Danbury's voice at the back of her head again, because she suddenly decided she didn't want to be the same old Penelope Featherington. She decided to join in the fun. She smiled a smile. She didn't think she'd even known how to smile. It was wicked, and she was mysterious, and she knew it wasn't all in her head, because Colin's eyes widened markedly as she murmured,
"That's a shame. It's rather enjoyable."
"Penelope Featherington," he drawled. "I thought you said you weren't dancing."
She shrugged.
"I lied."
"If that's the case," he said, "then surely this must be my dance."
Penelope's insides suddenly felt very queer. This was why she shouldn't let whispers from Lady Danbury go to her head. She might manage daring and charm for a fleeting moment, but she had no idea how to follow through. Unlike Colin, obviously, who was grinning devilishly as he held his arms out in perfect waltz position.
"Colin,"
she gasped,
"you're in Berkeley Square."
"I know. I just finished telling you I've never danced here, don't you recall?
But...
Colin crossed his arms. Tisk, tisk. You can't issue a dare like that and then try to weasel out of it. Besides, dancing in Berkeley Square seems like the sort of thing a person ought to do at least once in his life. Wouldn't you agree?
Anyone might see,
she whispered urgently. He shrugged, trying to hide the fact that he was rather entertained by her reaction. I don't care, do you? Her cheeks grew pink, then red, and it seemed to take her a great deal of effort to form the words.
People will think you are courting me.
He watched her closely, not understanding why she was disturbed. Who cared if people thought they were courting? The rumour would soon be proven false, and they'd have a good laugh at society's expense. It was on the tip of his tongue to say, "Hang society," but he held silent. There was something lurking deep in the brown depths of her eyes, some emotion he couldn't even begin to identify, an emotion he suspected he'd never even felt. And he realised that the last thing he wanted to do was hurt Penelope Featherington. She was his sister's best friend, and, moreover, she was, plain and simple, a very nice girl. He frowned. He supposed he shouldn't be calling her a girl any more. At 8 and 20, she was no more a girl than he was still a boy at 3 and 30. Finally, with great care, and what he hoped was a good dose of sensitivity, he asked, "Is there a reason why we should worry if people think we are courting?" She closed her eyes, and for a moment, Colin actually thought she might be in pain. When she opened them, her gaze was almost bittersweet.
"It would be very funny, actually," she said, "at first."
He said nothing, just waited for her to continue.
"But eventually it would become apparent that we are not actually courting, and it would..."
She stopped, swallowed, and Colin realised that she was not as composed on the inside as she hoped to appear.
"It would be assumed," she continued, "that you were the one to break things off, because, well, it just would be."
He didn't argue with her. He knew that her words were true. She let out a sad-sounding exhale.
"I don't want to subject myself to that. Even Lady Whistledown would probably write about it. How could she not? It would be far too juicy a piece of gossip for her to resist."
"I'm sorry, Penelope," Colin said. He wasn't sure what he was apologising for, but it still seemed like the right thing to say. She acknowledged him with a tiny nod.
"I know I shouldn't care what other people say, but I do."
He found himself turning slightly away as he considered her words, or maybe he was considering the tone of her voice, or maybe both. He'd always thought of himself as somewhat above society, not really outside of it precisely, since he certainly moved within it and usually enjoyed himself quite a bit, but he'd always assumed that his happiness did not depend upon the opinions of others. But maybe he wasn't thinking about this the right way. It was easy to assume that you didn't care about the opinions of others when those opinions were consistently favourable. Would he be so quick to dismiss the rest of society if they treated him the way they treated Penelope? She'd never been ostracised, never been made the subject of scandal. She just hadn't been popular. Oh, people were polite, and the Bridgertons had all befriended her. But most of Colin's memories of Penelope involved her standing at the perimeter of a ballroom, trying to look anywhere but at the dancing couples, clearly pretending that she really didn't want to dance. That was usually when he went over and asked her himself. She always looked grateful for the request, but also a little bit embarrassed, because they both knew he was doing it, at least a little bit, because he felt sorry for her. Colin tried to put himself in her shoes. It wasn't easy. He'd always been popular. His friends had looked up to him at school, and the women had flocked to his side when he'd entered society. And as much as he could say he didn't care what people thought, when it came right down to it, he rather liked being liked.
Suddenly, he didn't know what to say, which was strange, because he always knew what to say. In fact, he was somewhat famous for always knowing what to say. It was, he reflected, probably one of the reasons he was so well-liked. But he sensed that Penelope's feelings depended on his next words, and at some point in the last 10 minutes, her feelings had become very important to him. "You're right," he finally said, deciding that it was always a good idea to tell someone she was correct. "It was very insensitive of me. Perhaps we should start anew." She blinked.
"I beg your pardon?"
He waved his hand about, as if the motion could explain everything.
"Make a fresh start."
She looked quite adorably confused, which confused him, since he'd never thought Penelope the least bit adorable.
"But we've known each other for 12 years, she said.
"Has it really been that long?" He searched his brain, but for the life of him, he couldn't recall the event of their first meeting.
"Never mind that. I meant just for this afternoon, you ninny."
She smiled, clearly in spite of herself, and he knew that calling her a ninny had been the exact right thing to do, although in all truth he had no idea why.
"Here we go,"
he said slowly, drawing his words out with a long flourish of his arm.
"You are walking across Berkeley Square, and you spy me in the distance. I call out your name, and you reply by saying..."
Penelope caught her lower lip between her teeth, trying, for some unknown reason, to contain her smile. What magical star had Colin been born under, that he always knew what to say? He was the Pied Piper, leaving nothing but happy hearts and smiling faces in his wake. Penelope would have bet money, far more than the £1,000 Lady Danbury had offered up, that she was not the only woman in London desperately in love with the third Bridgerton. He dipped his head to the side and then righted it in a prompting sort of motion.
"I would reply," Penelope said slowly. "I would reply..."
Colin waited 2 seconds, then said,
"Really, any words will do."
Penelope had planned to fix a bright grin on her face, but she discovered that the smile on her lips was quite genuine.
"Colin,"
she said, trying to sound as if she'd just been surprised by his arrival.
"What are you doing about..."
"Excellent reply," he said.
She shook her finger at him.
"You're breaking out of character."
"Yes, yes, of course. Apologies."
He paused, blinked twice, then said,
"Here we are. How about this? Much the same as you, I imagine. Heading to No. 5 for tea."
Penelope found herself falling into the rhythm of the conversation.
"You sound as if you're just going for a visit. Don't you live there?"
He grimaced.
"Hopefully just for the next week. A fortnight at most. I'm trying to find a new place to live. I had to give up the lease on my old set of rooms when I left for Cyprus, and I haven't found a suitable replacement yet. I had a bit of business down on Piccadilly and thought I'd walk back."
"In the rain?"
He shrugged.
"It wasn't raining when I left earlier this morning, and even now it's just drizzle."
Just drizzle, Penelope thought. Drizzle that clung to his obscenely long eyelashes, framing eyes of such perfect green that more than one young lady had been moved to write extremely bad poetry about them. Even Penelope, level-headed as she liked to think herself, had spent many a night in bed, staring at the ceiling, and seeing nothing but those eyes. Just drizzle, indeed.
"Penelope?"
She snapped to attention.
"Right. Yes. I'm going to your mother's for tea as well. I do so every Monday, and often on other days too,"
she admitted.
"When there's, nothing interesting occurring at my house."
"No need to sound so guilty about it. My mother's a lovely woman. If she wants you over for tea, you should go."
Penelope had a bad habit of trying to hear between the lines of people's conversations, and she had a suspicion that Colin was really saying that he didn't blame her if she wanted to escape her own mother from time to time, which somehow, unaccountably, made her feel a little sad. He rocked on his heels for a moment, then said, "Well, I shouldn't keep you out here in the rain." She smiled, since they'd been standing outside for at least 15 minutes. Still, if he wanted to continue with the ruse, she would do so as well.
"I'm the one with the parasol," she pointed out.
His lips curved slightly. "So you are. But still, I wouldn't be much of a gentleman if I didn't steer you toward a more hospitable environment. Speaking of which..." He frowned, looking around.
"Speaking of what?"
"Of being a gentleman, I believe we're supposed to see to the welfare of ladies."
"And?"
He crossed his arms. "Shouldn't you have a maid with you?"
"I live just around the corner," she said,
a little bit deflated that he didn't remember that. She and her sister were best friends with two of his sisters, after all. He'd even walked her home once or twice.
"On Mount Street,"
she added, when his frown did not dissipate. He squinted slightly, looking in the direction of Mount Street, although she had no idea what he hoped to accomplish by doing so.
"Oh, for heaven's sake, Colin, it's just near the corner of Davies Street. It can't be more than a 5-minute walk to your mother's. 4, if I'm feeling exceptionally sprightly."
"I was just looking to see if there were any darkened or recessed spots." He turned back to face her. "Where a criminal might lurk."
"In Mayfair?"
"In Mayfair," he said grimly. "I really think you ought to have a maid accompany you when you journey to and fro. I should hate for something to happen to you." She was oddly touched by his concern, even though she knew he would have extended equal thoughtfulness to just about every female of his acquaintance. That was simply the sort of man he was.
"I can assure you that I observe all of the usual proprieties when I am travelling longer distances," she said. "But truly, this is so close. Just a few blocks, really. Even my mother doesn't mind."
Colin's jaw suddenly looked quite stiff.
"Not to mention," Penelope added, "that I am 28.
"What has that to do with anything? I am 33, if you care to know." She knew that, of course, since she knew almost everything about him.
"Colin,"
she said, a slightly annoyed whine creeping into her voice. "Penelope," he replied in exactly the same tone. She let out a long exhale before saying,
"I am quite firmly on the shelf, Colin. I needn't worry about all of the rules that plagued me when I was 17.
"I hardly think..."
One of Penelope's hands planted itself on her hip. "Ask your sister if you don't believe me."
He suddenly looked more serious than she had ever seen him. "I make it a point not to ask my sister on matters that relate to common sense."
"Colin," Penelope exclaimed, "that's a terrible thing to say."
"I didn't say I don't love her. I didn't even say I don't like her. I adore Eloise, as you well know. However..."
"Anything that begins with however has got to be bad," Penelope muttered.
"Eloise," he said with uncharacteristic high-handedness, "should be married by now." Now that was really too much, especially in that tone of voice.
"Some might say,"
Penelope returned, with a self-righteous little tilt of her chin,
"that you should be married by now, too."
"Oh, please—"
"You are, as you so proudly informed me, 33.
His expression was slightly amused, but with that pale tinge of irritation which told her he would not remain amused for long. "Penelope, don't even—"
"Ancient," she chirped.
He swore under his breath, which surprised her, since she didn't think she'd ever heard him do so in the presence of a lady. She probably should have taken it as a warning, but she was too riled up. She supposed the old saying was true. Courage spawned more courage. Or maybe it was more that recklessness emboldened more recklessness, because she just looked at him archly and said,
Weren't both of your older brothers married by the age of 30?
To her surprise, Colin merely smiled and crossed his arms as he leaned one shoulder against the tree they were standing beneath. My brothers and I are very different men. It was, Penelope realized, a very telling statement, because so many members of the Ton, including the fabled Lady Whistledown, made so much of the fact that the Bridgerton brothers looked so alike. Some had even gone so far as to call them interchangeable. Penelope hadn't thought any of them were bothered by this. In fact, she'd assumed they'd all felt flattered by the comparison, since they seemed to like each other so well. But maybe she was wrong. Or maybe she'd never looked closely enough. Which was rather strange, because she felt as if she'd spent half her life watching Colin Bridgerton. One thing she did know, however, and should have remembered, was that if Colin had any sort of a temper, he had never chosen to let her see it. Surely she'd flattered herself when she thought that her little quip about his brother's marrying before they turned 30 might set him off. No. His method of attack was a lazy smile, a well-timed joke. If Colin ever lost his temper... Penelope shook her head slightly, unable even to fathom it. Colin would never lose his temper, at least not in front of her. He'd have to be really, truly, no, profoundly upset to lose his temper. And that kind of fury could only be sparked by someone you really, truly, profoundly cared about. Colin liked her well enough, maybe even better than he liked most people. But he didn't care. Not that way.
Perhaps we should just agree to disagree, she finally said.
On what?
She
couldn't remember.
On what a spinster may or may not do?
He seemed amused by her hesitation. That would probably require that I defer to my younger sister's judgment in some capacity, which would be, as I am sure you can imagine, very difficult for me.
But you don't mind deferring to my judgment?
His smile was lazy and wicked. Not if you promise not to tell another living soul. He didn't mean it, of course. And she knew, he knew, she knew he didn't mean it. But that was his way. Humour and a smile could smooth any path. And blast him, it worked. Because she heard herself sighing and felt herself smiling, and before she knew it she was saying,
Enough. Let us be on our way to your mother's.
Colin grinned. Do you think she'll have biscuits? Penelope rolled her eyes.
I know she'll have biscuits.
Good, he said, taking off at a lope and half-dragging her with him. I do love my family, but I really just go for the food. Chapter 4 It is difficult to imagine that there is any news from the Bridgerton ball other than Lady Danbury's determination to discern the identity of this author, but the following items should be duly noted. Mr. Geoffrey Albansdale was seen dancing with Miss Felicity Featherington. Miss Felicity Featherington was also seen dancing with Mr. Lucas Hotchkiss. Mr. Lucas Hotchkiss was also seen dancing with Miss Hyacinth Bridgerton. Miss Hyacinth Bridgerton was also seen dancing with Viscount Berwick. Viscount Berwick was also seen dancing with Miss Jane Hotchkiss. Miss Jane Hotchkiss was also seen dancing with Mr. Colin Bridgerton. Mr. Colin Bridgerton was also seen dancing with Miss Penelope Featherington. And to round out this incestuous little ring around the rosy, Miss Penelope Featherington was seen speaking with Mr. Geoffrey Albansdale. It would have been too perfect if she'd actually danced with him. Don't you agree, dear reader? Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 12th of April, 1824. When Penelope and Colin entered the drawing-room, Eloise and Hyacinth were already sipping tea, along with both of the ladies Bridgerton. Violet, the dowager, was seated in front of a tea-service, and Kate, her daughter-in-law, and the wife of Antony, the current Viscount, was attempting, without much success, to control her 2-year-old daughter Charlotte.
"Look who I bumped into in Berkeley Square," Colin said.
"Penelope," Lady Bridgerton said with a warm smile. "Do sit down. The tea is still nice and hot, and cook made her famous butter biscuits." Colin made a beeline for the food, barely pausing to acknowledge his sisters. Penelope followed Lady Bridgerton's wave to a nearby chair and took a seat.
"Biscuits are good,"
Hyacinth said, thrusting a plate in her direction.
"Hyacinth,"
Lady Bridgerton said in a vaguely disapproving voice.
"Do try to speak in complete sentences."
Hyacinth looked at her mother with a surprised expression.
"Biscuits are good."
She cocked her head to the side.
"Noun, verb, adjective. Hyacinth."
Penelope could see that Lady Bridgerton was trying to look stern as she scolded her daughter, but she wasn't quite succeeding.
"Noun, verb, adjective,"
Colin said, wiping a crumb from his grinning face.
"Sentence is correct."
"If you're barely literate,"
Kate retorted, reaching for a biscuit.
"These are good,"
she said to Penelope, a sheepish smile crossing her face.
"This one's my 4th. "I love you, Colin,"
Hyacinth said, ignoring Kate completely.
"Of course you do," he murmured.
"I myself," Eloise said archly, "prefer to place articles before my nouns in my own writings."
Hyacinth snorted.
"Your writings?"
she echoed.
"I write many letters,"
Eloise said with a sniff.
"And I keep a journal, which I assure you is a very beneficial habit."
"It does keep one disciplined," Penelope put in, taking her cup and saucer from Lady Bridgerton's outstretched hands.
"Do you keep a journal?"
Kate asked, not really looking at her, since she had just jumped up from her chair to grasp her daughter before the 2-year-old climbed on a side table.
"I'm afraid not," Penelope said with a shake of her head. "It requires far too much discipline for me. I don't think it is always necessary to put an article before a noun,"
Hyacinth persisted, completely unable, as always, to let her side of the argument go. Unfortunately for the rest of the assemblage, Eloise was equally tenacious.
"You may leave off the article if you are referring to your noun in a general sense,"
she said, pursing her lips in a rather supercilious manner.
"But in this case, as you were referring to specific biscuits..."
Penelope wasn't positive, but she thought she heard Lady Bridgerton groan.
"Then, specifically," Eloise said with an arch of her brows, "you are incorrect."
Hyacinth turned to Penelope.
"I am positive she did not use specifically correctly in that last sentence."
Penelope reached for another butter biscuit.
"I refuse to enter the conversation."
"Coward," Colin murmured.
"No, just hungry."
Penelope turned to Kate.
"These are good."
Kate nodded her agreement.
"I have heard rumours," she said to Penelope, "that your sister may become betrothed."
Penelope blinked in surprise. She hadn't thought that Felicity's connection to Mr. Albansdale was public knowledge.
Where have you heard rumours?"
"Eloise, of course," Kate said matter-of-factly. "She always knows everything."
"And what I don't know,"
Eloise said with an easy grin,
"Hyacinth usually does. It's very convenient."
"Are you certain that neither one of you is Lady Whistledown?" Colin joked.
"Colin,"
Lady Bridgerton exclaimed,
"how could you even think such a thing?"
He shrugged.
"They're certainly both smart enough to carry off such a feat."
Eloise and Hyacinth beamed. Even Lady Bridgerton couldn't quite dismiss the compliment.
"Yes, well," she hemmed,
"Hyacinth is much too young. And Eloise..." She looked over at Eloise, who was watching her with a most amused expression. "Well, Eloise is not Lady Whistledown, I'm sure of it." Eloise looked at Colin.
"I'm not Lady Whistledown."
"That's too bad," he replied. "You'd be filthy rich by now, I imagine."
"You know,"
Penelope said thoughtfully.
That might be a good way to discern her identity.
5 pairs of eyes turned in her direction.
She has to be someone who has more money than she ought to have, Penelope explained. A good point, Hyacinth said, except that I haven't a clue how much money people ought to have. Neither do I, of course, Penelope replied, but most of the time one has a general idea.
At Hyacinth's blank stare, she added,
For example, if I suddenly went out and bought myself a diamond parure, that would be very suspect.
Kate nudged Penelope with her elbow.
Bought any diamond parures lately, eh?
I could use £1,000. Penelope let her eyes roll up for a second before replying, because, as the current Viscountess Bridgerton, Kate most certainly did not need £1,000.
I can assure you, she said, I don't own a single diamond, not even a ring.
Kate let out an oof of mock disgruntlement.
Well, you're no help, then.
It's not so much the money, Hyacinth announced. It's the glory.
Lady Bridgerton coughed on her tea. I'm sorry, Hyacinth, she said. But what did you just say?
Think of the accolades one would receive for having finally caught Lady Whistledown, Hyacinth said. It would be glorious.
Are you saying, Colin asked, a deceptively bland expression on his face, that you don't care about the money?
I would never say that,
Hyacinth said with a cheeky grin. It occurred to Penelope that of all the Bridgertons, Hyacinth and Colin were the most alike. It was probably a good thing Colin was so often out of the country. If he and Hyacinth ever joined forces in earnest, they could probably take over the world.
Hyacinth, Lady Bridgerton said firmly, you are not to make the search for Lady Whistledown your life's work.
But
I'm not saying you cannot ponder the problem and ask a few questions,
Lady Bridgerton hastened to add, holding up one hand to ward off further interruptions.
Good gracious! I would hope that after nearly 40 years of motherhood, I would know better than to try to stop you when you have your mind quite so set on something, nonsense as it may be.
Penelope brought her teacup to her mouth to cover her smile.
It's just that you have been known to be rather...
Lady Bridgerton delicately cleared her throat.
Single-minded at times.
Mother!
Lady Bridgerton continued, as if Hyacinth had never spoken. And I do not want you to forget that your primary focus at this time must be to look for a husband. Hyacinth uttered the word mother again, but this time it was more of a groan than a protest. Penelope stole a glance at Eloise, who had her eyes fixed on the ceiling and was clearly trying not to break out in a grin. Eloise had endured years of relentless matchmaking at her mother's hands and did not mind in the least that she seemed to have given up and moved on to Hyacinth. In truth, Penelope was surprised that Lady Bridgerton seemed to have finally accepted Eloise's unmarried state. She had never hidden the fact that her greatest aim in life was to see all 8 of her children happily married, and she'd succeeded with 4. First, Daphne had married Simon and become the Duchess of Hastings. The following year, Anthony had married Kate. There had been a bit of a lull after that, but both Benedict and Francesca had married within a year of each other. Benedict to Sophie, and Francesca to the Scottish Earl of Kilmartin. Francesca, unfortunately, had been widowed only 2 years after her marriage. She now divided her time between her late husband's family in Scotland and her own in London. When in town, however, she insisted upon living at Kilmartin House instead of at Bridgerton House or Number 5. Penelope didn't blame her. If she were a widow, she'd want to enjoy all of her independence too. Hyacinth generally bore her mother's matchmaking with good humour, since, as she had told Penelope, it wasn't as if she didn't want to get married eventually. Might as well let her mother do all the work, and then she could choose a husband when the right one presented himself. And it was with this good humour that she stood, kissed her mother on the cheek, and dutifully promised that her main focus in life was to look for a husband, all the while directing a cheeky, sneaky smile at her brother and sister. She was barely back in her seat when she said to the crowd at large,
"So, do you think she'll be caught?"
"Are we still discussing that whistle-down woman?" Lady Bridgerton groaned.
"Have you not heard Eloise's theory, then?"
Penelope asked. All eyes turned to Penelope, then to Eloise.
What is my theory?"
Eloise asked.
"It was just, I don't know, maybe a week ago," Penelope said. "We were talking about Lady Whistledown, and I said that I didn't see how she could possibly go on forever, that eventually she would have to make a mistake. Then Eloise said she wasn't so sure, that it had been over 10 years, and if she were going to make a mistake, wouldn't she have already done so? Then I said, no, she was only human. Eventually she would have to slip up, because no one could go on forever, and..." "Oh, I remember now," Eloise cut in. "We were at your house, in your room. I had the most brilliant idea. I said to Penelope that I would wager that Lady Whistledown has already made a mistake, and it's just we were too stupid to have noticed it."
"Not very complimentary for us, I must say," Colin murmured.
"Well, I did intend we to mean all of society, not just us Bridgertons,"
Eloise demurred.
"So maybe,"
Hyacinth mused,
"all I need to do to catch Lady Whistledown is peruse back issues of her column."
Lady Bridgerton's eyes filled with a mild panic.
"Hyacinth Bridgerton, I don't like the look on your face."
Hyacinth smiled and shrugged.
"I could have a great deal of fun with £1,000.
"God help us all," was her mother's reply. "Penelope," Colin said quite suddenly, "you never did finish telling us about Felicity. Is it true that she is to be engaged?" Penelope gulped down the tea she'd been in the process of sipping. Colin had a way of looking at a person, his green eyes so focused and intent that you felt as if you must be the only two people in the universe. Unfortunately for Penelope, it also seemed to have a way of reducing her to a stammering imbecile. If they were in the midst of conversation, she could generally hold her own. But when he surprised her like that, turning his attention onto her, just when she'd convinced herself she blended in perfectly with the wallpaper, she was completely and utterly lost.
Yes, it is quite possible," she said. "Mr. Albansdale has been hinting at his intentions, but if he does decide to propose, I imagine he will travel to East Anglia to ask my uncle for her hand."
"Your uncle?" Kate asked.
"My uncle Geoffrey. He lives near Norwich. He's our closest male relative, although, truth be told, we don't see him very often. But Mr. Albansdale is rather traditional. I don't think he would feel comfortable asking my mother."
"I hope he asks Felicity as well,"
Eloise said.
"I've often thought it foolish that a man asks a woman's father for her hand before he asks her. The father doesn't have to live with him."
"This attitude," Colin said, with an amused smile that was only partly hidden by his teacup, "may explain why you are as yet unmarried." Lady Bridgerton gave her son a stern glare and said his name disapprovingly.
"Oh, no, Mother,"
Eloise said.
"I don't mind. I'm perfectly comfortable as an old maid."
She gave Colin a rather superior look.
"I'd much rather be a spinster than be married to a bore.
As,"
she added with a flourish,
"would Penelope."
Startled by Eloise's hand waving rather suddenly in her direction, Penelope straightened her spine and said,
Yes, of course."
But Penelope had a feeling she wasn't quite as firm in her convictions as her friend. Unlike Eloise, she hadn't refused 6 offers of marriage. She hadn't refused any. She hadn't received even a one. She'd told herself that she wouldn't have accepted in any case, since her heart belonged to Colin. But was that really the truth? Or was she just trying to make herself feel better for having been such a resounding failure on the marriage mart? If someone asked her to marry him tomorrow,
someone perfectly kind and acceptable, whom she might never love, but would in all probability like very well, would she say yes? Probably. And this made her melancholy, because admitting this to herself meant she'd really, truly given up hope on Colin. It meant she wasn't as true to her principles as she'd hoped she was. It meant she was willing to settle on a less than perfect husband in order to have a home and family of her own. It wasn't anything that hundreds of women didn't do every year, but it was something that she'd never thought she'd do herself. "You look very serious all of a sudden," Colin said to her. Penelope jerked out of her musings.
"Me? Oh, no, no. I just lost myself in my thoughts, that's all."
Colin acknowledged her statement with a brief nod before reaching for another biscuit.
"Have we anything more substantial?" he asked, wrinkling his nose.
"If I'd known you were coming," his mother said in a dry voice, "I would have doubled the food." He stood and walked to the bell pull.
"I'll ring for more."
After giving it a yank, he turned back and asked,
"Did you hear about Penelope's Lady Whistledown theory?"
"No, I haven't," Lady Bridgerton replied.
"It's very clever, actually,"
Colin said, stopping to ask a maid for sandwiches, before finishing with,
"She thinks it's Lady Danbury."
"Oh!"
Hyacinth was visibly impressed.
"That's very cunning, Penelope."
Penelope nodded her head to the side in thanks.
"And just the sort of thing Lady Danbury would do,"
Hyacinth added. "The column or the challenge?" Kate asked, catching hold of the sash on Charlotte's frock before the little girl could scramble out of reach.
"Both,"
Hyacinth said.
"And,"
Eloise put in,
"Penelope told her so, right to her face."
Hyacinth's mouth dropped open, and it was obvious to Penelope that she'd just gone up, way up in Hyacinth's estimation.
"I should have liked to have seen that,"
Lady Bridgerton said, with a wide, proud smile. "Frankly, I'm surprised that didn't show up in this morning's Whistledown."
"I hardly think Lady Whistledown would comment upon individual people's theories as to her identity,"
Penelope said.
"Why not?"
Hyacinth asked.
"It would be an excellent way for her to set out a few red herrings. For example..."
She held her hand out toward her sister in a most dramatic pose.
"Say I thought it was Eloise."
"It is not Eloise," Lady Bridgerton protested.
"It's not me,"
Eloise said with a grin.
"But say I thought it was,"
Hyacinth said in an extremely beleaguered voice.
"And that I said so publicly."
"Which you would never do,"
her mother said sternly.
"Which I would never do,"
Hyacinth parroted.
"But just to be academic, let us pretend that I did, and say that Eloise really was Lady Whistledown, which she's not,"
she hastened to add, before her mother could interrupt again. Lady Bridgerton held up her hands in silent defeat.
"What better way to fool the masses,"
Hyacinth continued,
"than to make fun of me in her column?"
"Of course, if Lady Whistledown really were Eloise," Penelope mused.
"She's not,"
Lady Bridgerton burst out. Penelope couldn't help but laugh.
"But if she were, you know,"
Eloise said,
"now I really wish I were."
"What a joke you'd be having on us all," Penelope continued.
"Of course, then on Wednesday you couldn't run a column making fun of Hyacinth for thinking you were our Lady Whistledown, because then we'd all know it had to be you."
"Unless it was you,"
Kate laughed, looking at Penelope.
"That would be a devious trick."
"Let me see if I have it straight,"
Eloise said with a laugh.
"Penelope is Lady Whistledown, and she is going to run a column on Wednesday making fun of Hyacinth's theory that I'm Lady Whistledown, just to trick you into thinking that I really am Lady Whistledown, because Hyacinth suggested that that would be a cunning ruse."
"I am utterly lost,"
Colin said to no one in particular.
"Unless Colin were really Lady Whistledown,"
Hyacinth said, with a devilish gleam in her eye.
"Stop,"
Lady Bridgerton said. I beg you. By then, everyone was laughing too hard for Hyacinth to continue anyway.
The possibilities are endless,
Hyacinth said, wiping a tear from her eye.
Perhaps we should all simply look to the left, Collins suggested as he sat back down. Who knows? That person may very well be our infamous Lady Whistledown.
Everyone looked left, with the exception of Eloise, who looked right. Right to Colin.
Were you trying to tell me something?
She asked with an amused smile, when you sat down to my right.
Not at all, he murmured, reaching for the biscuit plate, and then stopping when he remembered it was empty.
But he didn't quite meet Eloise's eyes when he said so. If anyone other than Penelope had noticed his evasiveness, they were unable to question him on it, because that was when the sandwiches arrived, and he was useless for conversation after that.
Chapter 5. It has come to this author's attention that Lady Blackwood turned her ankle earlier this week whilst chasing down a delivery boy for this humble news sheet. £1,000 is certainly a great deal of money, but Lady Blackwood is hardly in need of funds, and, moreover, the situation is growing absurd. Surely Londoners have better things to do with their time than chase down poor, hapless delivery boys in a fruitless attempt to uncover the identity of this author. Or maybe not. This author has chronicled the activities of the Ton for over a decade now, and has found no evidence that they do indeed have anything better to do with their time. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 14th of April, 1824. 2 days later, Penelope found herself once again cutting across Berkeley Square on her way to Number 5 to see Eloise. This time, however, it was late morning, and it was sunny, and she did not bump into Colin along the way. Penelope wasn't sure if that was a bad thing or not. She and Eloise had made plans the week before to go shopping, but they'd decided to meet at Number 5 so that they could head out together and forego the accompaniment of their maids. It was a perfect sort of day, far more like June than April, and Penelope was looking forward to the short walk up to Oxford Street. But when she arrived at Eloise's house, she was met with a puzzled expression on the butler's face.
"Miss Featherington," he said,
blinking several times in rapid succession before locating a few more words.
"I don't believe Miss Eloise is here at present."
Penelope's lips parted in surprise.
"Where did she go? We made our plans over a week ago."
Wickham shook his head.
"I do not know, but she departed with her mother and Miss Hyacinth 2 hours earlier."
"I see."
Penelope frowned, trying to decide what to do.
"May I wait, then? Perhaps she was merely delayed. It's not like Eloise to forget an appointment."
He nodded graciously and showed her upstairs to the informal drawing-room, promising to bring a plate of refreshments and handing her the latest edition of Whistledown to read while she bided her time. Penelope had already read it, of course. It was delivered quite early in the morning, and she made a habit of perusing the column at breakfast. With so little to occupy her mind, she wandered over to the window and peered out over the Mayfair streetscape. But there wasn't much new to see. It was the same buildings she'd seen 1,000 times before, even the same people walking along the street. Maybe it was because she was pondering the sameness of her life that she noticed the one object new to her vista, a bound book lying open on the table. Even from several feet away, she could see that it was filled not with the printed word, but rather with neat, handwritten lines. She inched toward it and glanced down without actually touching the pages. It appeared to be a journal of sorts, and in the middle of the right-hand side there was a heading that was set apart from the rest of the text by a bit of space above and below.
22nd of February, 1824. Troodos Mountains, Cyprus.
One of her hands flew to her mouth,
Colin had written this. He'd said just the other day that he'd visited Cyprus instead of Greece. She had no idea that he kept a journal.